So we saw
Good.
Machloikas yesterday on Daf Mem Hey Omud Aleph. So let's review the Machloikas because we saw a stira. We've reconciled part of it. We're going to continue today. So let's do Chazara. We had a Machloikas Tanoim, a Machloikas between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Yehuda. How is an Isha Niskeles? How is she stoned? The opinion of Rabbonon was that a man is stoned Orum, but not so a woman. Rabbi Yehuda said the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, man is stoned Orum, a woman is stoned Orum. There's actually no difference whatsoever. So the Gemara said, even though this is learned from Sukkim, but the basis of this machlekes is, are we choshesh for Hirhur, or we are not choshesh for Hirhur? So the Rabbanon seem to be choshesh for Hirhur, and therefore they do not want to be mechayev the Isha to be Niskeles Orum, whereas Rabbi Yehuda seems to say the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda seems to say that no, we are not choshesh for Hirhur, and therefore we do not differentiate in any which way between a man and a woman. So the machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanon, as the Gemara explains, is all dependent on do we or do we not concern ourselves with Hirur. What was the problem? The problem is that elsewhere we seem to find the exact opposite. The exact opposite. And where was that? In the case of the Isha Saitar. Because there again we had a machlokes between the Tanakhama, Rabbanon, and Rabbi Yehuda. And it seemed to once again be all dependent on this concept of Hirur. The problem was that the opinions were the opposite way around. The discussion there was when you have to get a hold of the Isha Saitan. So the Rabbanon said that what? You pull at her clothing, and if it tears, it tears. If it tatters, it tatters. It doesn't matter. And Rabbi Yehuda was very concerned. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. If it's going to cause any type of hirur, she has libo inoe, then you would not do so. So all of a sudden, the roles seem to have been reversed. It's Rabbi Yehuda who seems to be concerned with Hirhur, but he was not concerned with that when in case of Skila. The Rabbanon seemed not concerned with Hirhur in the case of Soita, but they are concerned with Hirhur in the case of Skila. So we have, as it were, a double contradiction. A contradiction in the opinion of the Rabbanon, a contradiction in the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So what we left off with yesterday was reconciling one of those contradictions. And that was a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. Again, what's the contradiction? In the case of Skila, Rabbi Yehuda says that we're not concerned with Hirhur, and that even the Isha is stoned Orum. And in the case of Soita, Rabbi Yehuda is concerned with Hirhur. So the Gemara says, yes, that's correct. Because in the case of Soita, let's not forget, the woman has not yet been indicted. We don't know whether she's guilty or innocent, and therefore she may end up leaving the Beis HaMikdash perfectly innocent. And if she has had to go this lack of tznius experience, so that's going to cause those who are present in the Beis HaMikdash, the young Kohanim, to have Hirur when they see her afterwards. So that's why we're concerned with Hirur. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says it's better not to tear her clothes. Whereas in the case of Skila, she's about to die. She has been convicted. So there's no chance that she's coming out alive. So therefore, there's no hirur. And as the Gemara explained, there's no hirur about a dead person. One's not going to trigger hirur about somebody else. So the only person you're maharer about is the one that you see. But if she's dead, then that's it. So therefore, the Gemara says that's why there's no contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. It all depends on the circumstances. In the case of Soita, where she might end up being innocent. So there indeed, we have to concern ourselves with Hirur. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says, don't tear the beged. Where in the case of the Skila, where she's been convicted, and we've got to the point of no return, even though we said you can always rescind the decision and overturn it, but not now, they're right by the gallows, finished, she's about to be stoned, it's this second, they're up to the point of stoning, that will not be reversed, and therefore, she's a dead woman. If she's a dead woman, then there is no concern of Hirhur. Now, the Gemara has not answered both contradictions. We've only answered the contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda, but the contradiction in the Rabbanon that the Gemara has not answered, because we had a stira on the one hand. When it came to skila, the Rabbanon were very concerned with hirhur, so they said the isha should not be arum. And in the case of soita, they all of a sudden are not concerned with hirhur. Why? They said, yes, you rip the clothing, v'chule. That stira was never addressed. That steer was never addressed. And this is what the Gemara says. Yes, sorry.
Yuli Arayos is one of the three Yehareg Vayavars, so it's a pretty serious thing. And according to what we learned, there's never a time where she's completely, because the whole thing with the horse and Yabarsi, and even if she that the second before she's about to be have Skila, they could save her. So how could they say that Svara works?
Yeah, but it seems to be we literally are at the point of no return now.
But
They're about to.
there is no
There
point of no
is.
return.
This is the point of no return. You're 4 amos away from the base of Skila, it's all over. We have not seen any later stage. Clearly, this is the point of no return. I guess if this must be the point of no return. This must be the point of no return. Okay, so we have not yet reconciled the direction of the Rabbanon. So let's see, the Gemara now addresses this. Omar Rava. De Rabbi Yehuda, Ad Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda, that was a kasha you seem very bothered about. Derabbonon, Adarabbonon, loy kasha question mark. Is there no contradiction in the opinion of the Rabbonon as well? There jolly well is. So why are you only addressing the contradiction in the opinion of the Rabbi Yehuda? What happened to the contradiction in the Rabbonon? Why was that never addressed? Why are they concerned with Hirur in Skila and not concerned with Hirur in Saita? Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says, therefore, really, in order to truly reconcile this, you have to deal with both contradictions. And it's not yet come to a satisfactory resolution until you've dealt with both. So, says the Gemara. De Rabbi Yehuda ad Rabbi Yehuda loy kasha. So the contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda, okay, that's not shver, as we've already explained. We've already pointed out that indeed that's not a stira, because we're only concerned with Hira in the case of Saita. She might still emerge alive. That's been dealt with. But what about the Rabbonon? De Rabbonon ad Rabbonon nami loy kasha. Says Rav, I'd like to tell you that I believe there is no contradiction either in the opinion of the Rabbanon. It definitely would seem to be a contradiction, because in the case of Skila, they said they're concerned with Hirur. In the case of Soita, they said they are not concerned with Hirur. Says the Gemara, that can be resolved. You know why? It's based on a pasuk in Yeheskel. Omar Kro, v'noisru kol anoshim, v'loi ta'aseno kezamtechino. Rabbi Yosef, how would you like to translate this pasuk for us?
Well, I'll throw, and all women shall be chastised and shall not act similarly to your lewdness. Because,
In other words, the Isha Soita has a particular role in warning and fending off all other possible Noshim Soita. The whole reason why we put her through this very, very ignominious experience is in order to act as a disincentive for all other Noshim. So therefore, yes, hirur or not hirur, but unfortunately, there's another very important cheshbon. We have to ensure that all other women are chastised and they do not chas v'shalom copy. Therefore, hocha ein lecha yisur godol mizeh. In the case of death, that itself is the greatest disincentive. A person is put to death, as we know, the Torah says, Kol ha'om yishmu v'yira'u v'lo yezidun oid. So over there, we don't need to add insult to shame, as it were, by now ripping her clothes because she's been put to death and there's no greater disincentive than that. So therefore, that's when I have to concern myself with Hiruhuru. Because it's true, my prime priority is now to provide a warning sign to all other Noshim, but that is obviously provided by the fact that she's been put to death. But in the case of Saito, remember, she might not be put to death. Well, if she might not be put to death, what disincentive is being provided? I can't rely on the fact that she might explode upon drinking the waters because actually she might not. So, where will be the disincentive? The answer is the only trick up my sleeve is this inyan of being koireya her begodim. Look at Rashi. Because there is an obvious question which I thought somebody would ask, and that is that one moment. If she indeed emerges innocent, if she emerges innocent, so how can the Gemara say that we need to provide a disincentive for everybody else? And therefore, we're going to rip her clothes, etc., etc. Poor woman. Why should she have to suffer? She might indeed be an innocent woman. You appreciate the question? Why would you rip the clothes of an Isha Soita because we need to provide an incentive for other women where this particular woman herself might indeed be innocent? So, why should she have to go through this shameful experience? If she's guilty, she'll die. And that itself is a disincentive. But if she's innocent, well, then she doesn't deserve to die. And if she doesn't deserve to die, why should she now be the guinea pig for acting as a disincentive to all other people? The answer is, and this is so critical, and this is sometimes a misconception about the Sotah, the Isha Sotah is no tzaddikus. The Isha Soita has clearly been over an Aveira. There's no question about it. The only question is, which Aveira? Her husband and the Eidim clearly told her not to be beyichud with a particular man, and she was. That's an Aveira, no question about it. The only question is, how far did that go? And that is why she drinks the waters. Therefore, she certainly deserves some type of shameful experience, some type of punishment. We want to now cause that to happen now, because in the event that she turns out to be innocent, meaning innocent from what? Not completely innocent, but innocent from the worst aveira, well, where was there a disincentive for others? Have a look at Rashi. V'noisru kol anoshim. If they would not be makalkel, they would not, as it were, embarrass her in some way. Ein kan yisur. Well, then there's no chastising. There's no disincentive. Im teitzei zako. If she will end up being innocent, what will happen? She'll come to Beis HaMikdash, she'll go home, and nothing happened. And that's why that we have to say no. We have absolutely every intention to embarrass her in order to provide, as it were, a yisur, what the Gemara calls a yisur, some type of disincentive for other women. That everybody should know this is what happens to you if you, chas v'shalom, do the same. Now, adds Rashi what we just said before. And even in the event she turns out to be innocent, meaning what? That she didn't actually become Tommy, there were no relations. Don't make a mistake. She was nonetheless a prutza. She is nonetheless a woman with a lack of tznius. Why? Shahare kinala v'nistira. There was what's called kinu v'stira. There was warning by the husband, by the Edim, and she completely disobeyed that. So therefore, she definitely deserves some type of punishment, which is part punishment and part chastising, offending, or acting as a disincentive for others. That's in the case of the Isha Soita. What about in the case of Skila? Says Rashi, over here where she's being killed, Ein Yisur Godoil Mizeh. There is no greater disincentive than death. Adds Rashi, V'tama lav mishum hirhur hi. You've been barking up the wrong tree. It's nothing to do with hirhur. You thought that the reason why Rabbanon said that you don't rip her clothes in the case of Skila, you don't take off her clothes in the case of Skila, is because of hirhur. No, it's nothing to do with that. Rather, what is it? There's no need to do it. Because the whole act is in order to act as a disincentive. There's already a disincentive. In fact, there's the greatest possible disincentive, the fact that she's being killed. Whereas in the case of Saita, where she's not necessarily going to be killed, so I need to provide a different incentive, and that is the embarrassment. But it's nothing to do with hero. Yes, Reb Larry.
Isn't there a svara or a chazal or something? I don't remember where it is that says that if the Isha Sota turns out not to have been over that particular Avera, Hashem rewards her and gives her, she
Correct.
makes her extremely fertile or something like that.
Correct.
And
100%.
that so therefore it goes along to say because of all the busha, yes, she did the wrong thing, she was alone, whatever, but we embarrass us. The whole incident is so embarrassing for her that if she in fact did not do that particular avera, she's zocha to a reward of from Hashem because she had some tremendous busha.
Correct. So Chazal do say this. Rashi brings it out of Torah and Pashas Nosai. That if she turns out to be innocent, she'll have bonim tovim, etc., etc., which, as you point out, at first glance is a very difficult concept to understand. Yes, she doesn't get Misa. Okay, it turns out she was not over the worst of the worst of areas, but why should she get this whole reward? Oh, we feel so sorry for you. Why do you feel sorry? She's definitely Isha Prutza. So the answer must be, like you're pointing out, that at the end of the day, we feel bad for her shame. It's true, perhaps she deserved to be shamed. She had no right doing what she did. But at the end of the day, we have to reward her, as it were, for her shame. Says the Gemara, now there's one more question. We're not completely out of it. Li Avid Ba Tarati. What does Li'aved bo tarti mean? I understand Li'aved bo tarti literally translated means let's do both. You've told me that what? You've told me that what? That in the case of Misa, when the Isha has to get Skila, then we've already provided a disincentive by virtue of the fact that we're killing her. So there's no need anymore to now also take off her clothes. Fine, that may be true. But can you imagine if we would kill her and also take off her clothes? Well, wouldn't that be even more of a disincentive? So why don't we do both? You're telling me, well, there's no greater incentive, disincentive than death. Well, actually, there is death and embarrassment. So why don't we do both? Says the Gemara, Omar of Nachman, and this is a very important yesoid, which we're going to see later on in the Masechta as well. Omar of Nachman, Omar Rabba Ba'ava Vua Omar Kro, Va'ohavta L'Reacha Kamoicha. There is a famous principle learned from this pasuk of after Reacha Kamoicha, which is Beroir Loi Misa Yofer. We always try and choose the most, as it were, dignified death. We'll see many halachas, including in the very next line of the Gemara, and later on in this Omud. It's going to be a very, very central principle as we learn these sugyas of the Mises Beis Din, that we always try to the best of our ability to preserve the dignity and the pain of the person being killed. V'haftarecha k'moicha. So if that's the case, it's true, she's getting killed. And she has to get killed. Why does she have to get killed? Well, number one, as a punishment for the Aveira she committed. Number two, as a disincentive for all other people. But if you're asking the question, well, on top of that, why don't we also make sure that she's Orum? That would provide a further disincentive. The answer is that's true, but we're trying to preserve the dignity of this woman. Bror loy misa yofa, says Rashi, two words, misa yofa, veloy tevazehu, rather than embarrassing her. Rather than embarrassing her. Says the Gemara in conclusion, not so poshut. Lay murder of Nachman, Tanoi he. Let us suggest, as we always point out, whenever we have this word, lema means the Gemara is going to reject it. Rav Nachman's principle, what was Rav Nachman's principle? That we learn from after Echa Kamoicha, that we have to always choose, as it were, the most dignified death. Well, that would seem to be a very nice explanation of the opinion of the Rabbanon. Again, what did the Rabbanon say? The woman is not stoned Orum. Why not? Why would you not stone her Orum in order to provide further disincentive to everybody else? The answer is Rav Nachman's principle. But one second, that's a wonderful explanation of the Rabbanon, but let's not forget, in the same Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda disagreed. And Rabbi Yehuda says, you jolly well make sure that the Isha is also Orum. Well, that does not fit in with Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman's principle seems to be a machlokes tanoim. Do we or don't we preserve the interests of the person being killed? Rabbanon seemed to hold of Rav Nachman's principle, and that's why they said, do not remove her clothes in order to preserve her dignity. And Rabbi Yehuda doesn't seem to be concerned with it. No, jolly well stone her, jolly well remove her clothes. What about her dignity? Couldn't care. So it seemed to be that Rav Nachman's principle is in fact a machlokes tanoim. Says the Gemara, Lema, the Rav Nachman tanoi he? Question mark. Doesn't Rav Nachman's principle seem to be a machlokes tanoim? Now, do you remember yesterday we pointed out that removing the clothes of the person being stoned is actually a two-sided coin? Why is it a two-sided coin? Remember what we said yesterday? On the one hand, the minus is that it's embarrassing. But what's the plus? The plus is that the person is killed quicker, there's less pain. If he's clothed, and I guess the clothing adds is some type of padding or cushioning, so for the stoning might not be immediately effective. So therefore, removing the clothes is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, there's a maila, because they get killed quicker, it's less painful. On the other hand, there's a chesaron. If that's the case, now look at the Gemara just before the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, loy, the kula alma isluhu de Rav Nachman. The machlokes tanoim, they're not debating whether we do or don't hold of Rav Nachman. Everybody holds of Rav Nachman. We have to preserve the interests of the person being killed. What is the machlokes now? What are the interests of the person being killed? Is it better with clothes or better without clothes? Because each direction has a maila. So the machlokes tanoim is, what's a more significant maila? Both opinions agree to Rav Nachman's principle that what? That we're looking to help the person being killed. But here there are two possible ways of helping this woman. If you leave her clothes on, well, then you preserved her dignity. If you take her clothes off, well, then you've preserved her pain. So which one is better? That's the machlokes. Look at the Gemara. Loi. It's not a machlokes tanoim. Dekula alma isluhu de Rav Nachman. All parties hold of Rav Nachman. V'hochan over here, b'hoch, they are debating the following. Mar sovar, one opinion holds. Bizyoini, the bizyoin is the embarrassment, the inish of a person. Adifale tfei, is more important to him, minicha de gufei. More important is a person's dignity and shame rather than having a comfortable, painless experience. Nicha de gufei, that is, guf should be comfortable. Umar sava, that no, the opposite. I maintain that nicha de gufei, to have a comfortable body, meaning less pain, that is odif mi bizyoni. That's better than bizyoni. So it turns out that the machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon is not whether Rav Nachman is correct or not correct. Everybody agrees that Rav Nachman's principle is correct, and you've got to preserve the interests of the person you're being killed. The machloikas is only which interest is the most important interest. Is it the pain of the guf or the shame? Have a look at Rashi. Bizyoni de'inesh odif lei. Kloima. Godoil be'enov. It is very great in a person's eyes, this concept of bizyoinos. Tfei, more so minicha degufei, than having a comfortable guf, meaning less pain. Hilkoch, therefore. Noyach lo. Therefore, it's better for her shetisokel belavusha. Therefore, she'd rather be stoned with her clothes, even if that means v'tishher lomos, that will delay somewhat the death. V'afogav de'iketzara de'gufa, even though that necessarily means there will be tzar of the guf. Why is that better for her? Why does she want to endure extra pain? V'loy tevaze oiso lahavshita, just in order not to embarrassing her by to strip her of her clothing. Hilkoch, therefore, zuhi breiras misa yofer. Therefore, that is in fact a fulfillment of Rav Nachman's mandate to choose the most dignified death. Because in the first opinion, in the opinion of Rabbonon, nothing to do with hirhur or anything, Rabbonon maintained. Do you know why we don't remove her clothes? Not because of hirhur. Because we have to choose the best death for her. And the best death for her is the one that preserves her shame, even though it means she's going to endure more pain, but she would prefer to be clothed and have to endure extra pain rather than being unclothed and have to endure shame. That's the first opinion. What did Rabbi Yehuda hold? Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you do take her clothes off. Says that last Rashi that no. Nicha de gufa. Odiflo, Godoil be'enov. Rabbi Yehuda says, I maintain that the opposite is true. It's greater in her eyes, the comfortability of her guf, meaning not to have to endure pain. Tfei mi bizyoni, more than shame. Hilkoch, therefore, tafshi tenor, therefore, when you remove her clothing, zu hi yofelo, that is the best possible thing for him, for her. Yes, Jablari.
What is the process of skila? Is it they stand around and throw rocks at her? Does they throw her off a
That's the next
roof? What?
mission. That's the next mission, the next line.
Because I thought I heard, unless I'm totally wrong, that they throw them off a roof, right?
We're going to see that much in a
So if
second.
that's the case, what does the clothing have to do with it?
Because it'll
They're
add
not
as a
throwing
problem.
rocks at her.
They do after they throw a rock. We'll see Mamash in the next line of the Mishnah. They first push her off a building, that him or her. She might not die straight away. Then they pummel him with
Okay,
rocks.
but the point is. The ikka thing is throwing off the building. Hopefully she'll die. So what is the clothing protecting I have to do with anything?
But she might not. The more she's padded and sheltered, she might not die. So she'll be have broken bones and a lot of pain, but she won't
Think
die.
our clothing is going to prevent if she th throw off a building
What was
from
that?
dying.
Yeah, it's only if it's two koimos, we'll see it's two floors high. It's not the highest, off from the top of the Empire State Building. Al Koponim, it turns out, therefore, fascinating halacha, that the reason why we do or don't remove the clothes of an isha, it turns out in the final analysis, is not because of hirhur. That's not the issue. The issue is we have to pick a misa where we preserve the interests of this rasha. The machloikas is only what are the interests of the rasha? Is it more important to her the pain, or is it more important to her the shame? That is a discussion. Yeah. Okay, we have 4.5 minutes left. So let's just make a brief start at least to the next Mishnah, because now indeed we have got to the final stage. We've spoken at great, great length. We've learned all the sugyas of how we try to exempt, and with the Talmidim and the Dayanim and the horse and the banners. We then learn further on, they do vidui. We've discussed the whole subject of vidui. Now we've discussed, you're right there at the Beis HaSkila, you remove the clothes or you don't remove the clothes. And now, Rabbeisai, we are up to the gory, tragic moment of when you actually have to stone a Jew. And this is how it's done, says the Mishnah. Beis HaSkila, this building, as it were, of Beis HaSkila, remember, as discussed early on, it's not the Beis Din, it's not in the Beis Din. In fact, it's nowhere near the Beis Din. It's outside the three machanas. And there's a little building, a house called the Beis HaSkila. Hoyo Gavoya Shtei Koimois. It was 2 floors high. So it's not that high. 2 floors high. Echod Min Ho'edim Doichfoi Almosnov. How do they translate that, Rabbi Yosef? One of the Edim does what?
Pushes
Pushes,
him
yes.
by his hips.
Pushing him by his hips. Carry on, keep on reading, Rabbi Yosef.
Yeah.
Ne'epach al liboy. Carry on.
So that he falls on his chest.
Okay.
If oh sorry. If he falls on his chest, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Then he is turned onto his hips. If he had died from this fall, it's sufficient.
So, in other words, what happens to him? We have this building which is 2 floors high, which is not so high, maybe 5 or 6 meters high. And one of the Edim now pushes him, Al Mosnov, on his hips. Ne'epach al liboy, hoifchoy al Mosnov. If for some reason he turned to his heart, then we will turn him over Al Mosnov. The Immesbar. If indeed through the fall the person died, yotzah, that's it, you yotzah, you don't do anything more. That is the fulfillment of skila. Ve'imlav, but if the person did not die as a result of this fall, then hasheni, now the second aid steps into the scene. He takes the rock and he throws it on his heart. Remember, we said if he falls face down, we turn him over. So his heart up. The second aid, if the person has not yet died, will now launch a rock at this person's chest. Imesbar yotzah. If indeed by then he died, then he's yotzah. That's it. But v'imlav, regimose b'kol Yisrael. Then he's stoned by all of Klal Yisrael, all those present, shenema, yad. Or Edim tia boy borishoino, the hands of the Edim are first lahamisoi, but then viyad kol ha'om ba'achroino.
Rabbi, why wouldn't they throw him a rock in the head? It'd be that much, you could kill him easy, much easier.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. It could be. It's also to do with Misa Yofa. We'll see Mitz Hashem. We'll see Mitz Hashem. Okay, we'll carry this on tomorrow, Mitz Hashem.
Right.
Okay, be well, everybody. Cult.